Good evening. It's a pleasure to welcome you all here to St. James Cathedral Center for our Truth and Reconciliation series. This has been an amazing series that we've been hosting for about a year and a half, believe it or not. And a lot of you were there at the beginning, back a year ago this past June when I was first hired. And we started this project. And this project is in response to the 94 calls to action. See, I got this nice button on myself that says the 94 calls to action. Can anyone tell me what the 94 calls to action are? No, not... Yeah. That would be bold of me. Just where do the 94 calls to action come from?
TRC.
What's the TRC? All right, somebody's got to stand up and say it louder so everyone else can hear it. How about, go for it. Yes, so the 94 calls to action came out of the Truth and Reconciliation Report. And the Truth and Reconciliation process was really a process that the nation of Canada underwent, investigating, hearing stories, looking at evidence, talking to survivors, to look at the residential school system and what happened there, and document the atrocities done to people, and attempt to modeled after South Africa with their reconciliation process, say, how can we go forward as a nation? How can we grapple with the tremendous spiritual, social, sexual, physical violence done against First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people by the state and the churches, all those involved in running the schools, and the broader issue of colonialism in Canada? How do we grapple with such a huge and heavy history, such a heavy, heavy weight and heavy truth to face? And so the 94 calls to action are really, really important because they are a tangible sign of this is what a reconciled future might begin to look like. They are 94 proposals that call upon different governing bodies, different agencies, different facets of society, and gives them a recommendation towards what it would mean to live as people of truth and reconciliation here on this land. So I really recommend reading them if you haven't. It doesn't take very long, and they're pretty amazing when you think, because a lot of people say to me, okay, I've been coming to this series for a while, and I don't know what to do. And Justice Sinclair says that no one anymore can go to a lecture or something on Indigenous issues and then leave saying, okay, I feel bad, but now I have nothing to do. I don't know what to do, because Justice Sinclair says, I gave you 94 things to do. So pick one, he says. So if you haven't read them, I really invite you to read them. Maybe form a small group in your community that you come from to read the 94 calls to action, reflect on them together, and write your MP. Pick an issue that is listed there. It's a framework for reconciliation, and it's for all of us. So please take a look at them. But one of them, a bunch of them actually, call upon the churches for specific things. And one of them calls on the churches to provide public, free, educational opportunities on Indigenous issues, especially around the residential schools. So this program is started in response to that call. And so we've been doing this for a while. We host one lecture per month. We take a break in December because things are a little busy around here. And my head's backwards that month. It's wild. But we will continue with our Truth and Reconciliation series into the new year. So please follow our website and our Facebook page for all the amazing things that we have going on here. So we begin, as we always do, by acknowledging the traditional territory that we are on, the sacred land that we're on that is traditional to the Huron-Wendat peoples, the Haudenosaunee nations of the Iroquois Confederacy, and the Mississaugas of New Credit and other Anishinaabeg nations. And we acknowledge also Chinabich or Niganigichigami, the beautiful shores of Lake Ontario that we live on. Now, I'd like to draw your attention to some upcoming events that we have here at St. James, and more info is on our website, which is stjamescathedral.ca. But we have an exciting series coming up for Advent, and Advent is a very sacred time for us here. And so we're inviting our new bishops especially, but all five bishops of our diocese are going to be speaking on Advent. And the title of our series is The Meaning of the Wreath, an Advent lecture series on five Wednesday evenings with the bishops of the Diocese of Toronto. So we'll begin each Wednesday with worship like we did tonight at 6 o'clock, and then a light supper here at 6:30, and then our 7 o'clock lecture. So this will begin on Wednesday, November 29th with Bishop Jenny Anderson. She will be speaking on hope. What is hope? What does hope mean to us? Where do we find hope in our lives? Followed by December 6th, Bishop Peter Fenty will be speaking on love. The following Wednesday, Bishop Priscilla Shaw will be speaking on peace. The following Wednesday, the Archbishop will be speaking on joy. And then in January, on January 10th, Bishop Kevin Robertson will be speaking on Epiphany, on the light of Christ. So we will start just before Advent and we'll go till just after the 10 days of Christmas. So it's a lovely, lovely practice to enter into this festive season together and really deepen into the heart of why we celebrate Christmas and what is this all about? What is Advent about? So it'll be a beautiful, beautiful spiritual reflection in such a chaotic and often consumer-driven season. So I invite you to stay tuned for more details on our Advent series. Now for what we're really here for. You all came out in the cold wind tonight to hear from one of my favorite people, Bishop Mark MacDonald. Bishop MacDonald is an incredibly humble and kind man. He has been a huge mentor to me and very supportive of lots of people like me out there who are in the trenches of ministry. And Bishop Mark travels more than anyone I've ever met. We went to Standing Rock last November together, and he'd like just come back from the Arctic and then was going to New Zealand or something the next day. Like, his schedule is wild. Nevertheless, he has a full family with children and a wonderful wife here in Toronto, and he is one of the busiest people I know who is out there working so hard, making sure that Indigenous Christians feel like their voices are heard and that they matter, and their concerns are brought to the wider church. And he is a huge advocate also for spirituality of living in right relationship with creation. In fact, he was recognized by winning the Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal in recognition for his spiritual leadership in Indigenous communities and his contributions to the environmental awareness of all Canadians. Bishop Mark serves as North America's president to the World Council of Churches, which is a really big deal, just want to say, if you don't know. And he's the author also of several publications. He often has a column in the Anglican Journal that I invite you to check out. And some of his works include The Chant of Life, Enculturation and the People of the Land. Bishop Mark is also a Third Order Franciscan. So please join me in welcoming our National Indigenous Bishop here tonight.
Bonjour, Nindawemirganug. I want to greet you all as my relatives. It's quite an introduction. Whenever I get an introduction like that, I'm reminded of my 17-year-old son. My 17-year-old son likes his dad, I think, appears to like me. But whenever I do something dumb or old, he says out loud, "Ladies and gentlemen, the National Indigenous Anglican Bishop." I'm not quite sure what he's trying to get at there, but he seems to enjoy that whenever I do something dumb or old looking. So it's great to be with you, and I enjoy talking about reconciliation. What I would like to do tonight is to give an idea of reconciliation from what I would consider a biblical and Christian theological perspective, but I hope to do it in such a way that it will speak to anybody about the process of healing and reconciliation that we're now on in Canada and also in the churches. It is difficult for modern people, particularly modern Christians, to think biblically, to think the way the Bible does. I'll give an example. Because we focus so much on individuals and individual autonomy, it's very difficult for us to understand the way that the Bible is very concerned with tracing forces in history and creation. And so the Bible and the story about the living Word of God, which is at the heart of the New Testament, the story about the living Word of God describes the kind of trajectory in history and creation that for the writers of the New Testament and for the early church was very important. And so tonight, I would like to trace something of the trajectory of healing in Canada and in the churches revolved around the Indian Residential Schools, the IRS. In order to talk about that trajectory of healing, we need to talk about other forces that exist in creation and in history. So we'll look at that as well. What I'm trying to advance is the idea, as we find it in the Bible and in early Christian theology, that the living Word of God has a way, a path, through history and creation. And the early church was very concerned with discerning that path in history. Now, Martin Luther King, in one of his favorite quotes, gets something of what we're talking about here. He quoted, and I can't remember who the quote comes from. It may come to me later. But Martin Luther King liked to quote the idea that the path of history tends towards justice. Martin Luther King, being a Christian theologian, traced and tracked the path of the living Word of God in creation and history, and he described it in this quote, the path of justice. And his point being that we can see this path of justice as it moves through history and creation. I would like to suggest that in Canada, we see a very unique path of justice in the relationship of Indigenous people to non-Indigenous people. Now, most of us, just judging from the age of most of us in the room, we had our initial history of the relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people through John Wayne. Meaning that the American media and the movies and that story had a real role in shaping our basic understanding of the relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. The problem with that, particularly for Canada and Canadians, is that there was, in contrast to the American history, a very different history here in Canada. Chief Elijah Harper referred to that quite often, that although there was armed conflict, although there was great conflict, the early history of Canada involves a trajectory that is encouraging. Jonathan Ralston Saul, in his book, A Fair Country, describes that trajectory. There was a long period of cooperation between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people, cooperation that had to do with technology, with industry. The first 200 years of Canada's existence was premised upon a level of cooperation between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people. The industry and technology that was present in Canada was heavily indebted to Indigenous technology and understanding, Indigenous know-how, and certainly Indigenous cooperation. So Ralston's point is that the economic and cultural foundation of Canada was one in which there was a tremendous amount of cooperation between Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people. That was the original trajectory of hope that Canada was based upon. What we see after Confederation is a rapid devolvement of that, a rapid falling apart of that type of understanding, so that when the residential schools begin to become a factor in the late 1800s, we see a very, very different point of view. And that trajectory is the trajectory that we need to speak about prior to talking about the trajectory of healing that we see in reconciliation. And so before we can talk about the trajectory of healing, the forces of healing as they are moving throughout our land and our minds and our hearts, we need to speak about another trajectory, a trajectory of systemic evil. And that's what I would like to talk about first.